Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hello.
Show's namesake, BJ Shea. He's right over there.
Right over here. Get over here.
And running the boards is Joey D's.
Wah.
Yes, it's Wednesday. But we're going to be doing our Wednesday in space.
Oh.
We're going to be talking about a lot of space stuff, including Lost in Space, Star Trek, one that's not so spacey, but it's set in the future with Finch. We'll talk comic books and, of course, the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com.
It's
going to have our blogs, podcasts, and more.
More?
Or, you know, just shoot us a message. Just, you know, find us, BJ Geek Nation, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, and the Odyssey app. You can shoot us messages on most of those.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Lots of ways to get a hold of us. And one of the coolest ways to also get a hold of us is just to tweet straight at us or at BJ Geek Nation. You can do so. And one of our good friends, our good listeners, A Drifting Nerd on Twitter, he sends us a lot of the trailers to make sure that we don't miss them. And I have to believe that BJ didn't miss that the season 3 trailer for Lost in Space dropped, because the show's coming out in December on December 1st.
Yes.
How excited are you for this? Because I remember when it first came out and you didn't know what to think, because obviously Lost in Space, the original, was like monumentally influential to you. There was the movie in the 90s.
Yeah, which was okay.
Which was all right.
But it does not age well either. It was okay and ages poorly.
And then we ended up with the series now. And for the first two seasons, you've kind of given a lot of raves. And so I kind of feel that you would be excited for this.
Yeah, this is a really good, this is a good young person show. Man, I feel like, man, a little kid probably can watch this, and they're just much more sophisticated, because some of the storylines and the dialogue, I'm like, wow, you know, some of this is kind of basic for an adult, but at the same time, it's like, but if I were 6, I think this would be over my head. And then I realized, well, but you know what? Kids are a lot more sophisticated than I was back then. So this is so well done. It is basically a bunch of adventurers. And if anything could go wrong, it will go wrong. Which, by the way, when you think about having to try to go to space and relocate a bunch of human beings, you know, S can go down.
Totally.
And having to land on a planet, and you know, we're used to seeing people land on planets, and the planets are super friendly and cool. And they have been able to really show a lot of, I think, the core heart and concepts of the original Lost in Space. And I really love that. It's like, oh, yeah, they did have to deal with stuff like this back in the old show. And boy, the first season was all about this planet of hell that they had to deal with when they went off course. And they've made some changes as far as to, you know, what certain iconic characters may or may not be, and they're, you know, what they're all about. But I love Parker Posey's upgrade of Dr. Smith. You think of what would a 2020 Dr. Smith be like? Because in the 1960s, you know, they just weren't deep. Characters weren't deep, even though Jonathan Harris did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
They just weren't deep like they are now. Parker Posey's Dr. Smith is basically the same person, a coward survivalist, if you will, but much more deep, much more complex. I mean, and she plays it so well. I do love that she basically steals the character, the identity of Dr. Smith, from a dude who, by the way, was a cameo. Billy Mumy was so that was cool in the first season. I love that her name is June Harris, which is a nice nod to Jonathan Harris, who was the guy that played Dr. Smith. So
they did a fair amount of research, or at least had a super fan in the Lost in Space universe in order to help them with it.
Yeah, the first two seasons are great, but of course we're like, okay, what the hell's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
So season 3's trailer looks amazing. And here's the funny thing. It's been a while, so Will Robinson's voice, I mean, and he's all over this trailer. It's like he's not a little kid anymore like you would expect. I mean, he's a little kid. He's 11, I think, in first season.
Okay, yeah.
And he's a teenager now, and he sounds like a teenager, so.
That's probably why they let it end it after this season.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how, I didn't see him a lot next to his two sisters, but it'd be interesting to see how tall he is compared to Penny and Judy. But I've loved everything that they've done with this show. So I'm so looking forward to it on Netflix December 1st. If you haven't watched Lost in Space, it's a good show. It really, really is. A lot of the crap that they have to go through is like what you think would happen. And I think that's pretty amazing. You don't really see this a lot in a television show where they're fighting the environment the whole time. And it seems like every 5 seconds they're getting their ass kicked by the nature of having to travel to a whole different place and trying to be humans there. And it's just like, yeah, but this ain't Earth, man. You're going to get your butt kicked. And then, of course, there's a bunch of enemies, which it turns out the enemies are mad at them for a good reason. You know, at first it looked like this is just a random, oh, hey, these guys are beating them up. And then you find out after the end of the first season, end of the second season, oh, you stole something from them. So that's why basic human a-holes stealing stuff from, you know, and then they got to get their asses kicked for it. But now we seem to think that Will Robinson's very, very important because it was weird that Will had this relationship with the robot who is not a robot that's from Earth. It's an alien robot.
Yeah.
So that's the difference than from the original series or from the TV, the movie. But we was like, why is this robot being cool to Will? What is going on? I mean, what is happening? And apparently the third season is going to answer that as Will apparently is quite important to the bunches and bunches of robots that we saw in the trailer. There's like an S ton of robots.
Oh, no.
And they don't look friendly at all.
Usually when there's an S ton of robots, they're not going to be a friendly force there.
I mean, this is an exciting time because obviously Star Trek Voyager has by the airing of this, Star Trek Discovery has started. We will tell you what we feel about that next week. And we will, well, actually, when I say started, it starts tomorrow. What am I talking about? Star Trek Voyager starts tomorrow.
We'll talk about it eventually.
Discovery starts tomorrow. Voyager is here. Yeah, so I got Discovery starting tomorrow, Lost in Space starting in December, so both of those shows will be running at the same time. Like, I'm excited about my holiday season.
Well, and I mean, even at that point in time, Star Trek Prodigy is one that I've seen you and our good friend Kayla LaFrance tweeting back and forth about. And that one was kind of interesting to me just because the simple fact that it is animated. And I don't know, is it geared towards kids or what is going on with this?
It is on the Nickelodeon Network.
That's what I thought.
Or at least it says it's a Nickelodeon show because I watch it on the on Paramount Plus. So I don't know if it's on Nickelodeon Network, but it's called a Nickelodeon show. Mm-hmm. So you know right off the bat it's aimed at kids. Kayla LaFrance, of course, the Queen of the Nerds, season two. She and I have gone back and forth. She's not a big fan of the new Star Trek, not a fan of new Picard, not a fan of Star Trek Discovery. She loves Voyager. It is her favorite show out of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, Janeway was one of the favorite characters of all time in Star Trek. She has a cat named Janeway.
Absolutely, yeah.
She is a rocket scientist, Kayla, literally works for NASA down in Houston. So, you know, I go back and forth with her, but I mean, I really can't hang with her if she wants to tell me scientifically why things are with it. I have no idea. I'm a dope. What do I know? But she really liked Lower Decks, which was the animated series that is the fun animated series, not for kids. It's an adult animated series that just ended their second season and was excellent. So we were both like, I don't know. I told her, I said to her, look, Janeway, a hologram of Janeway, is in Star Trek Prodigy. Yes, and Kate Mulgrew is doing the voice. Kate Mulgrew, in every interview, says she's so excited to present Star Trek to a brand new audience because it's for kids. So this show reminds me of Star Wars Rebels in the Trek universe.
Really?
As a matter of fact, Dahl, the main character, he really really reminds me of Ezra. If anybody remembers Rebels, when Ezra first started, he was a street rat stealing stuff. And this is kind of what Dahl reminds me of. He's in prison and he's a kind of a street rat kind of guy, and they basically discover this prototype Federation ship in what's called the Delta Quadrant, which is where Voyager got lost. And so there's not a whole lot going on, but somehow this other ship ends up in the Delta Quadrant. But, you know, they've got some really good voice actors in this, including Vicky, one of your favorite voice actors of all time from Big Mouth.
Nick Kroll?
Close. Who else is in there?
I know Jay Mantzoukas?
That's the man. Jason Mantzoukas is actually playing a Tellarite. Those are the pig face looking Star Trek aliens.
Of course. Yeah, that makes sense for Jason.
And he's great. I mean, Jason Mantzoukas is fantastic.
He's a great actor and a good voice actor as well.
Side note, Big Mouth, the new season dropped last week too. So if you guys are
there's something else to binge.
There you go.
So, you know, Prodigy's a kid's show, and surely at times you go, this is a kid's show, and even some of the characters and the way they're drawn, you know, you're like, okay, but but still it's drawn beautifully, and yet it's also quite adult as far as, they take this seriously. They don't talk down to the audience. As a matter of fact, the bad guy is voiced by John Noble. Who played, of course, Boromir? Was it? He was the father, the crazy father of Aragorn.
Oh, yeah,
and Slapomir.
Wasn't he in Fringe as well?
He was
yes,
in Fringe,
exactly.
Yeah,
and he was also
he
the
was
father.
Walter in Fringe.
He was also the father in The Boys.
That's,
he was Butcher's dad.
That's right.
Yeah, John Noble is a good call, Vicky. I totally forgot he was that. Yeah, John Noble is a great actor and a great voice, too.
100%,
so.
Yeah.
He plays the bad guy who wants that ship, and the ship basically gets kidnapped by these prisoners who are all kids, really, and they end up getting the ship and accidentally activate the command protocol hologram. So instead of like, you know, and we all know the holographic doctor in Voyager. Mm-hmm. Well, then they started making holographic assistants for almost everything, which was featured in Picard, which was also great if you didn't see Picard's holograms. And so she is the holographic command trainee. She's like, oh, you're all cadets and my job is to train you, as they have kidnapped this prototype amazing Federation ship, you know, in the time of Janeway. So it's good. I was not expecting it to be good, but I wanted to watch it because Kate Mulgrew is, you know, reprising her role.
Right, yeah.
She loves the fact she's doing it. And they do a darn good job. They really, really do. I am very, very happy with Star Trek Prodigy. It exceeded my expectations.
And you still, I mean, you talked about how it doesn't talk down to the kids. How, like, what age range do you think would be kind of best for the kids if you're, you know, budding Star Trek fans?
I feel like whatever your kid watched, like if your kid loves Star Trek, Clone Wars, or Rebels, or anything like that, I gotta be thinking you could 6 years old could dig this.
Okay,
yeah, I mean, all there's right. No doubt about it. 6 years old could dig this and above. But yeah, as an adult, you'll be like, oh, or if you're a Star Trek fan, you'll be like, this is cool, because basically what they're doing, they are introducing Federation ideals to a world that knows nothing about the Federation. These kids don't even know. They even look at her and go, God, she looks weird. She has no ridges on her head. She's just kind of, you know. So they know nothing about the Federation, but they come from an existence, as they're all in prison, basically as slaves. This is not a good world, or at least a good culture that they come from, all these different aliens. There's a Tellarite there, which is interesting because Tellarites are in the Beta and Alpha Quadrant. So how he got to the Delta Quadrant, we don't know. New aliens, new whatever. And the Federation looks pretty good to these people who have, like, wow, we were treated pretty badly. And the princess, the daughter of the big bad guy, got kidnapped along with these people who stole the ship. But she's kind of a good person and doesn't know everything about her father and like what he's all about. So I have a feeling, you know, eventually she's probably going to be like, wow, my dad's a jerk and I'm going to be on these guys' side.
Fair enough.
Sounds, Star Trek Prodigy on Paramount Plus.
Sounds super interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, moving on from that, this is not on the Paramount Plus, but it's on the Apple TV Plus, starring Tom Hanks in He Is Finch, a man who embarks on a moving and powerful journey to find a new home with for his unlikely family, which is his beloved dog and a newly created robot in a dangerous and ravaged world. BJ, you do have Apple TV Plus, so you saw it.
I sure do.
And how do you feel about Tom Hanks in the sci-fi apocalypse?
Well, you know, Tom Hanks playing a loner, he does it well. You know, he's, you know, when he was the guy in the airport, a Joe Airport guy.
Oh,
when
he was like Terminal.
Yeah, when he was in Castaway. you know, so Tom knows how to play the guy. This is Gemini Man with heart.
Okay.
And I believe that's the... Is Gemini Man the one that Will Smith did was a
with
redo?
Yeah.
Was
because he had a dog in that, too?
No, that was I Am Legend.
Yeah, that was I Am Legend.
Okay, so it's I Am Legend, then.
Gemini Man is where he finds his younger version of himself or something.
Yeah, yeah,
oh, right,
yeah.
Right.
And then he had the other one with his son.
After Earth.
Which so.
Apparently, recently, I read that that's part of the reason why his son wanted to be emancipated from him at 16. He felt betrayed because that movie sucked.
Oh. But maybe Finch doesn't suck?
No, I mean, look, the good, I mean, I don't know what you can get from the trailers on this. I don't think the trailers mislead you, whereas the trailers for Dune and some of the hype about Dune, mm-hmm. the trailers for Eternals, a lot of those are misleading, and... This movie is a slow movie, but it's intentionally slow. It's a world builder. It's a character builder. And really, you know, the one that steals the show is a gentleman by the name of Caleb Landry Jones. I don't know much about Caleb, but he plays the voice of the robot Tom Hanks constructs.
He was in Get Out. He was the brother of the girlfriend. And he was also in X-Men First Class. He was Banshee.
Okay.
Good
well,
call.
How about, yeah, that's awesome. Well, he does a great job as the voice of the robot. And it pretty much is just it's Tom Hanks. He's the only human in this movie.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, there are other people that you'll see. I won't tell you how you see them, but the bottom line is that he's pretty much the only human being in the movie. So, and you get that pretty much. I mean, you're watching 20 minutes and you're going, yeah, he's the only guy I'm going to see in this movie. You know, there's just movies like that. There was that movie, was it Moon or whatever, with Sam Rockwell?
Yeah, that was a great movie.
And again, he was the only dude you saw for the most part, you know. I mean, there were other people, but again, I won't ruin
no spoilers as to how you see those people.
It's the same thing with this. I like this movie a lot. My wife and I watched it, and she didn't hate it. She realized, wow, this is kind of a slow movie. Which way is this going to go? But it, you know, it gets you in the heartstrings. You get invested, and it says a lot. And you know, it's interesting. There are stories that The Walking Dead tell. The Walking Dead has a central storyline that it tells throughout its entire existence, and that is the threat. Are not the zombies, the threat of the humans.
Absolutely. And that should be kind of the staple when you're dealing with like a zombie type movie.
This movie tells that same story. So
all
it
right.
gives
okay.
without basically, you know, zombies coming at you. It tells it in a slower pace, but it tells that same story. Tom Hanks is terrific. He's a great actor, so this is a great guy to play this kind of movie where he's carrying the whole movie, basically. And Caleb does a great job as the robot. The dog does a great job. I don't know who the dog was. They don't. Oh, Seamus.
The dog gets third billing on the credits there.
Seamus, you did a great job. He plays
Good for
the dog.
You.
And I won't tell you the dog's name just because the way everybody gets their names are kind of fun, so I will just leave it all for you to discover yourself.
Nice.
Seamus is the real name of the dog. But yeah, if you have Apple TV Plus, this is a worthwhile movie to watch because you get to sit down. It's beautiful cinematography if you got a big enough TV screen. Well done. And another example of how, you know, these streamers are getting top-notch people to go out and do stuff for them.
Yeah, and especially with Apple TV Plus, you've talked about some of the other stuff, including like C with Jason Momoa and some other things going along those lines. So they threw their hat in a big way to get some stuff. So
they have
good
foundation.
For them.
Yeah, I mean you got Steve Carell, you know, and Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. You know, so they got some people. No matter what Joey and I might think of foundation on any given episode, the amount of money they spend and the special effects and the world and the cinematography, and I'm trying to think of another word, the costuming and the sets are just amazing. So Apple TV Plus is putting out stuff.
Exactly. But it is comic book day, and so I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a couple of comics, and you seem to be getting still deep into the world of the old Spider-Man.
Well, you know me. I don't read a lot because a couple of my books have come to an end, and another one's about coming to an end too. But yeah, Spidey is a whole new. This is an interesting thing that they're doing. They're doing this whole story arc, this Beyond story arc, where multiple writers and multiple artists are going to be taking issues it's almost like what they do with a TV show where, you know, there's a story arc to a TV show like Doctor Who Flux, but it's not always going to have the same director, not always going to have the same writer. And in the world of comic books, you're also not always going to get the same artist. And so it is kind of cool. Sarah Pacelli, of course, is a great comic book artist, and a lot of people may know who she is. So she takes issue 77. Kelly Thompson is the writer, and both of them put together an interesting story. Spider-Man is a brand that has been sold, and therefore Ben the clone has got to be the guy to be Spider-Man, but they're not happy with his performance. And so he's like, he's got performance reviews. He's getting balled out by the boss. You're not a good enough Spider-Man.
That sucks.
Meanwhile, Peter is in the hospital because he got radiated to almost death. So, and Aunt May's pissed off, and she's kind of like Aunt Karen. She's trying to get the hospital to do things that she needs to do. This is interesting because it's a great storyline about this Beyond Corporation, and they seem to be very insidious. I mean, they got a lot of money. They got their own Spider-Man. Where is this going to go? But this is an epic, epic Spider-Man story that's been planned for, I think the editor said that they're over a year, maybe 18 months, they've been putting together all the pieces and creating, you know, this whole storyline of how it's going to be and recruiting all of these artists and writers. So it is an epic, epic production. And so this is just the second issue of that, Spider-Man 77. And it's good. It's very, very good. I forgot to talk about that. Even have a new logo. Like, the Amazing Spider-Man logo was changed, and I'm kind of digging it.
Now, it's not so much of a fan reaction in terms of, like, just the anger and vitriol that as when Doc Ock took over Spider-Man, right?
And I love that storyline.
I know
people were pissed off, but I thought that was a really cool, because, you know, Spidey and Ock you could argue the Green Goblin is his arch nemesis, but boy, Ock is close as well too as being Spidey's arch nemesis. And I just love that Ock, you know, was got in his brain.
He won for a little while, which is the perfect thing to do with a villain. Obviously, you're going to go back to a status quo, and especially with Beyond here, you're going to get back to the whole thing. But have them shake it up for a while. Have Captain America say Hail Hydra just to freak people out for a little bit.
And yet there's depth to the storyline, because when Ock took over Pete's mind, he also got all of Pete's memories. And Ock was like, oh, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. And so he got to see it from Pete's perspective. And it actually, Otto was like, oh, I guess you're not, you know, I mean, oh, damn it. I kind of now feel for you, you know. So I love that about the whole thing, is that when people can get insight, because, you know, there's never good guy versus bad guys. We saw with the Black Panther movie, you know, I mean, Killmonger had his own traumatic story that, you know, he wasn't just, oh, I fell in a vat of acid and that's why I'm Killmonger. You know, there was a story that went to it, and Ock finally got to see Pete's story.
Yeah.
And then we also got to see, oh, I guess Ock is not just as two-dimensional. I am evil. Ha-ha!
But sometimes that's also fun.
So I really like that storyline. And I of course, maybe I'm just too big of a fan of Dan Slott, and he can never do wrong in my eyes.
Okay. I know you do love Dan Slott. Yeah. Now, finally, I know another comic book writer that you do love is Robert Kirkman.
I do.
And what's going on with Oblivion Song?
Oblivion Song's getting it's getting down. I mean, this is the end of the thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
They got two or three issues left, I believe. Next one comes out, I think, in January. I got to wait for. So I'm like, okay, either December or January. But yeah, they're kicking ass. I mean, they're going to war, but they're trying not to go to war. And, you know, alien beings from a Cthulian dimension are still a holes. Like, they have their leaders that are a holes. They also have their people that really want peace. And so you've got the military, and you've got scientists, you've got all of these alien creatures, and they are all either A, trying to kill everybody, or B, trying to be peaceful with everybody. And that's the big thing going on with this. It's going insane as it's winding down its run, and it will end the series. Who told me, was it you, Vicky? One of you guys said that Oblivion Song is going to be done into something. Did it get picked up by somebody?
I think it's been optioned for a TV show.
Wrong one.
But I don't know 100% at this point. I know that we did talk about it previously.
Someone was attached to it, and I don't remember who.
Jake
Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, that's right.
He's going to produce it and star in it.
Yes, and it's perfect for Jake. So I am so excited to see this on screen, because it is, you know, man, it is a good story, and it's going to have an ending, which I think, because I felt like, how far could they go with this? And I think even Robert Kirkman said, yeah, I can't really go far with this. It's a great, you know, this is going to be a great story. I mean, you know, it's a 3-year story arc, which is surely a long time, and maybe even actually longer, because they don't come out every month. So it will be coming to an end soon. Oblivion Song. But if you like Robert Kirkman, of course, he's the Invincible guy, the Walking Dead guy. This is, you know, this is a good story. And, you know, Kirkman, I really liked what he's done with this, and I'll be sad when it's gone.
Yeah, but at least you'll at least have a movie with Jake Gyllenhaal and tentacles. That'll be fun.
Oh, you'll get tentacles.
Not speaking of tentacles. We just now have time for
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
All right, Vicky, what's going on?
One of my favorite things to read, just because it feels like when you start to picture it, it's like it's a variant or it's another universe, like another multiverse.
Oh, yeah.
It's when you hear actors who were supposed to play a certain role or who passed on a certain role and that movie blew up and got big and you can't picture, like, for example, Wolverine, Hugh Jackman. No one else can play Wolverine.
Yeah.
It's very hard to picture anybody else playing Wolverine. But we know it's come out, like, Russell Crowe was supposed to, like, that was their first choice.
And you know what? Like, thinking about it, like, around that time, I mean, Gladiator had, it'd been a couple years since then, but it was, he was very reminiscent on that. Like, everyone had him in their brains for that.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be like, okay, yeah, that would make a little bit of sense. And I didn't really know anything about Hugh Jackman when he became Wolverine.
I think he did, like, Kate and Leopold was, like, probably one of his bigger movies then.
But yeah, like, at this point in time, I can't think of anybody else who perfectly embodies Wolverine on the big screen like he did.
And like I said, they originally wanted, you know, Australian, which I didn't realize he was Australian as well.
Oh, yeah.
Russell Crowe, but the Academy Award winning actor passed on the mutant because he didn't want to be typecast as a wolf, because Crowe mistakenly thought that a Wolverine was an actual wolf and not a mammal that resembles a small bear.
Oops.
Oh, interesting.
But okay, I do have a list of actors who passed on hit movies for surprising reasons.
All right, cool. This sounds fun.
And one that blew my mind on this list, I did not know this is who they were wanting first. And I can't imagine the movie. The movie is Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Okay.
And the actor who passed on it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys want to guess, or should I tell you?
Well, which role?
For the main role, I believe. Yes.
For Bob Hoskins' role. Oh man, I don't know. I don't know if I could imagine anybody else other than Bob on
this. This is a very big actor. He was very big in the '80s, and in fact, he did another movie that came out at the exact same time instead of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Well, that was a long time ago. The 80s.
Yeah.
The movie is Coming to America.
Eddie Murphy?
Whoa,
that would have been a completely different movie.
He apparently did not see the vision behind the mystery comedy movie, so he took the part in Coming to America, and honestly, because he didn't get it. He said, I was going to be the Bob Hoskins dude, and I was like, what? Animation and people sounds like BS to me. Now, every time I see it, I feel like an idiot.
Well, and I mean, to be perfectly honest, like, I felt that, like, Bob Hoskins really kind of embodied that sort of hard-boiled noir
detective. Yeah.
I couldn't see Eddie Murphy in that spot. If he would have done it and it would have pulled it off, that would have been amazing.
I don't think he would have. I think we probably would have gone, like, another Mario movie.
Mm.
I feel like that's the vibe I would have gone. Like, it'd been trying too hard to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Eddie Murphy is Eddie Murphy. Granted, I love Coming to America, so I'm glad he did that.
Yeah, I'm super glad that he did that as well.
But did you know that Bruce Willis actually passed on Ghost?
You can't say that was a bad thing.
Wow.
Which, I mean...
Well, that's wild, because isn't Demi Moore the female lead in that?
Yeah.
Wow, how crazy is that?
Yeah, right? That would have been interesting if it was Bruce and Demi.
Her husband.
Yeah. So, I didn't even think about that. Good call.
Bruce Willis decided to turn down the role because they were both at the top of their game and they were the it couple, right? So he turned down the role... Just so people wouldn't remember him as the Ditto, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, nobody really thought of that about Patrick Swayze, but it wasn't necessarily the fact that he had done Ghost. It was the fact that he had done so many other things at that point in time that Ghost was a movie that he was in, and it wasn't a particularly great movie, but it did have some iconic scenes.
Well, you guys were young at the time.
Yeah.
But he was a rock star because of that movie. Women loved him for how he was in Ghost. I think Bruce Willis didn't realize the idea of somebody being dead but coming back to be with you anyway. Like, basically, I will still hang with you and love you. And the women loved Patrick Swayze for that role.
Fair enough. Yeah. I've got the male side on that one, where you just remember Patrick Swayze as like Dalton, or like Bodie from Point Break. Like all the big
Roundhouse.
Like, all the big movies.
The
like
ladies
that.
Loved Mr. Swayze. That was a good role for him.
He's a beautiful man.
Maybe that's why my mom watched that movie so many times.
I think so. My wife, your mom. Oh yeah. Everybody was loving Ghostly Swayze.
I was a little kid when I watched that. All I can think of is I really want to do the clay thing. I thought that part looked
pottery?
Cool. I wanted to do pottery, not the love thing. I just love the pottery. And then I was scared of the ghost.
I don't want to do that love thing.
Every generation's interpretation of ghost. Like, right? Oh, the pottery's messy.
It came out in the early 1990s. It was itty bitty.
That's what I'm saying. I was 30 at the time, and I remember like, oh my god. And then one woman though said, you know who you remind me of? And I'm like, usually I got Crispin Glover, and she said, you remind me of Patrick Swayze. And I'm like,
excuse me.
Wow, hello. I'm like, that's good because everybody loves that guy. And my wife was like, his brother that has a concussion, you know. And this, you know. All right, fine.
So, but Bruce Willis did admit that he was a knucklehead and regretted passing on the role of Sam Wheat, which is Patrick Swayze's character. And at the time, the actor just couldn't get his head around the idea of playing a ghost. And I just didn't get it. I said, hey, the guy's dead. How are you going to have a romance? But Swayze obviously did not have a problem with it. And they had great chemistry on scene. But a few years later, you know, Willis did decide to play a movie like a ghost story with M. Night Shyamalan for The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, and even then, he wasn't the dead person. Oh, wait, he was the dead person. That's right. I forgot.
He was.
Oh,
spoiler alert.
What? How dare
you?
Joe, don't worry about it.
Sorry about that.
Earmuffs.
All right, so how about the movie The Godfather?
You're going back in time on this one.
Yeah, 1972.
We got two big roles.
The Michael Corleone.
So that's the Pacino role.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Another big actor of the time, and had a very woke reason for passing on the part, and he does not regret his decision for turning it down.
Wow.
Because one of the most seminal characters doesn't regret turning it down. It says, back then, I believe that people, basically, Native Americans should play Native Americans, Italians should play Italians, and he himself was not Italian.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, that's a cool reason.
Jack Nicholson.
Wow.
Oh, so Jack Nicholson was like, yeah, I'm not an Italian. I don't think I'm good for this role.
So Mario Puzo had written such a great book that if you go back to it, you'll see so much of what was special about the movie. And there were a lot of actors who could have played Michael, myself included, but Al Pacino was Michael Corleone, and I can't think of a better compliment to play him. I can't think of a better compliment to pay him. He is that character.
And look, Pacino, you're right. I mean, Nicholson was a tremendous actor at the time. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, you could see why they want him, you know, because you're looking for star power when they did these movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily accuracy, but Pacino, man, it's hard to believe that anybody but Pacino could play that role.
This one, I think she could have done it. I think she would have done a really good job, but the movie's still great as it is. And this is a older movie. I hate saying it because it came out in 1990.
An older movie. Shut up.
Stephen King's Misery.
Are we talking about James Caan or Kathy Bates?
We're talking about Kathy Bates. Yeah. The crazy fan Ann Wilkes was almost played by Bette Midler.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know what? I would have been like, no, except that I felt that she was really good in Hocus Pocus. But
that's too corny and cheesy.
Exactly.
In a good way.
That was the thing. It's like Misery was played pretty straight. And I don't think
we knew of Kathy Bates a whole lot. You know, she was a relative unknown in my brain, if I remember. That's a good call. It's one of those things like, you know, if you say, hey, could Charlize Theron, play the character she played in the Mad Max movie?
Furiosa.
Could she have played Furiosa? I would have said, I don't know, man. I don't think so. I think you need somebody gritty. But then, you know, then you remember that actually she's done some really good stuff because she's a great actor. Bette Midler probably could have done it. But you think of Bette Midler as a classier... somebody that's just better off than that Kathy Bates character is. You know what I mean? It's hard to buy, like, Bette Midler, is that insane and that needy? That's my brain thinking, like, I don't know if that could have been pulled off.
I mean, she was a kooky witch. We like, hated children, hated the beautiful mornings, all that stuff. Right. But it was still cartoony. And Bette Midler, I think, in the you know, deep down is just a comedian. So I feel like it would have been weird. And but she did say she regretted the decision to turn it down. Kathy Bates, in case you didn't know, got an Academy Award for that.
Oh, yeah, like, good call.
I turned that down because I didn't want to saw off someone's foot. And even though the role won an Oscar, it was stupid to say no to those pictures. She also turned down Sister Act because, quote, my fans don't want to see me in a wimple.
Well, and you know what? I think Whoopi Goldberg was really good in yes. Sister Act as well.
Agreed.
So I feel that was fine. And yeah, like,
thinking, well, there's a couple of movies she turned down. Good job.
Yeah, man. Right. And I'm just like, I'm just trying to think of like Bette Midler in that hobbling scene, which will be forever etched in my memory. And it's just so menacing with Kathy Bates that it is going to be something that is going to be one of those most memorable like scenes in a movie for all time.
Check out the list. It's on Facebook right now on our page. Just search BJ Chase Geek Nation. You'll find it. It's got some pretty cool ones on here as well that I didn't get to, so you can check that out for yourself. And until next time, stay nerdy.